Hi everyone. I just want to give a little shout out that Business Barn Raising is now open for the year. This time around, we are really focusing on helping people who have been interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into their practice get started. And the most important things to get started really are focusing on your practice location, getting all the systems in place that you are going to need to provide services. Those are things like insurance and contracts. And finally, finding the clients that you need to run your practice. And in Business Barn Raising, we cover all of these areas, both in lesson content format as well as supported coaching calls. So if you think this is something that might be helpful to you, be sure to reach out and get signed up. We will be starting in June.
Gina.
Not Ryan.
Co-hosts of Animals of Aquatics podcast. We're here today to talk with you and share a little bit about fieldwork experiences.
I'm really excited because this is our first time doing a podcast together. Normally we do things separately. Although that wasn't the intention to start, we wanted to kind of co-host, but you know, work and life and everything else just kind of got in the way of that. And we're actually here doing it together now. Feels pretty good.
Yeah. So this week, our focus is on fieldwork students and interns. And we actually have two summer interns with us and four level one fieldwork students who are working with us this summer. And we have worked with level two students in the past. And we want to share what that experience is like, both from the fieldwork educator side of things, as well as how we prepare to help our students have a successful experience. And right from the beginning, thinking about how a fieldwork student can serve your business or your practice is an important part of thinking how they're going to fit in. But then both Ryan and I were talking about how important it is to think about the student side and what their needs are going to be.
Yeah, so I try to let the students know, because we practice in very, you know, unconventional settings. It's not a clinic setting. And so the students really may not know what they're getting themselves into. I think that as a practitioner, I didn't know what I was getting myself into, specifically with aquatic therapy. You know, the nature-based stuff I could kind of figure out, like, okay, I'm going to need sunscreen. I'm going to need X amount of water and food. And, you know, I could anticipate things. When it came to using the pool as a setting, that presented challenges that I didn't necessarily anticipate. For example, I wished that I had, told myself to purchase a wetsuit, not only for the cold, because I was, after a few hours in the pool, I was blue, but also for the buoyancy aspect and energy conservation. And there was just a lot of things that I hadn't really considered for just that one simple piece of gear.
So we like to create a structure to our fieldwork program that is going to help students be successful. And from the practice owner side of things, it's really important to get that system in place. That way, it's something that you can reuse over and over again and really tweak as you get to know students better, as you get to know their needs better. And it's something that you can build on. So one of the first components of that is your contract with the university or the college that will be sending you students. And knowing how that process kind of flows as a fieldwork coordinator is going to reach out to you and they're going to ask what your availability is. So being able to communicate what your needs are, what your availability is going to be, what are the days and times that you practice? So that way they can know if that's going to fit with their students' typical schedule. Now, over the summer, these students have pretty open availability for the most part, other than some vacations and things like that. But during the semester, when we're seeing students, some colleges have a set day for fieldwork, Wednesday afternoons or all day on Friday. If you don't practice on that day, then you're not a good match with that particular university. If it happens to match up with your treatment sessions, then that can work out really well. And one of the nice things I really like about students is they're super dedicated, they're motivated, and they already come with a bit of baseline knowledge. Where we have to help them is filling in our specialty areas, in getting some background knowledge, even sometimes before they come for their first visit.
So thinking about the setting that you're practicing in, we'll take the example of nature-based therapy, asking somebody if they're the outdoors type. Do they enjoy hiking? Do they like doing things outdoors? Or are they somebody who avoids it? Because I find it hard to believe, but there are people who don't like to be outside at all. They think nature sucks. And so those people are out there. And hopefully we try to convert them. But giving them an understanding of, yes, there's going to be bugs, there's going to be sun, there may be rain.
Poison ivy.
There's going to be bees. There's going to be, you name it, and you could run into it. And so anticipating that and making sure that their comfort level is commensurate with the activities that we're going to be engaging in our therapy sessions. So that's kind of just getting a baseline of their sense of what the setting is and why it is an important therapeutic tool that we can use.
Some colleges do a really nice job of having a student profile that gets sent out to you, and that can be really helpful. And a lot of times that student profile also comes with the assignments that the student is going to need to complete during their time with you. So that way you can look over those assignments and see how you can fit them in to your typical treatment repertoire. And I find the biggest challenge with those types of assignments tend to be if there's an evaluation component, that sometimes can be a little bit of a challenge in our unique settings because our client turnover may not be huge and we may not have new client evaluations ongoing on a regular basis. So I always just check those. I reach out to the fieldwork coordinator if I'm concerned about the student meeting those requirements and if there can be an alternative component to that assignment. Sometimes the student can do an assessment on a client that you already have. This can be a nice opportunity to gain some more information about one of your clients or to try a new assessment out. So those are some nice opportunities. If you don't have that client profile and those assignments, then it is so important, like Ryan said, to reach out and get a good feel for this person that's coming to be with you and to spend time with you. For our level one students, that's about 40 hours. So for us, that could be as many as 10 weeks. If they're only coming for one afternoon, that's a pretty long time for us to be working together. And it really is a large time investment and commitment to take on fieldwork students and give them what they need, build them up for the profession, get them excited. And for our level one students, it's really about understanding what OT is, not about learning what is hippotherapy or what is aquatic therapy or how to do nature-based therapy, but really it's learning what is OT, what are the fundamental components.
And in addition to discussing the demands of the environment that we work in, I also really like to make sure to make time to talk with the fieldwork students before and after the sessions. Number one, I like to kind of front brief them on what we're going to be doing that day, if there's a theme that we're using, who the clients are that we're going to be seeing, and what clinical conditions they may have, and what are the ways that we're going to be addressing that. And then after the sessions, I like to get feedback on what it is that they saw. And I like to just ask, like, so what did you think? What did you observe? So really trying to, like Gina was saying about the level one fieldwork students, we're trying to just give them a baseline, but getting a sense of it. Some of the level one students get that and they can get a little bit more deep into the weeds as far as what happened during the session.
Yeah, it's really interesting when we're bringing on new students and we're getting them acclimated to the clients that we work with, the conditions that our clients typically are going to present with, both from a diagnosis standpoint, but then also from just a presentation standpoint. And so our fieldwork students actually get a really broad range of clientele that they get to see and work with, everything from diagnoses and challenges like anxiety and school refusal, all the way up to more physical disabilities like hemiplegia, pediatric CBAs. So it really does span a pretty big continuum. And a lot of the students, when we're making those initial contacts and we're finding out some baseline information about the student, they'll ask us what they need to brush up on. And so I have a form email that goes out to them that gives them basic information, such as what to wear and what to bring, when to come, which location they might be coming to. If you have multiple locations, that can be really important that they're clued in to which location they're going to meet you at on which day. So that way you don't get a desperate and frantic text from somebody who's at the wrong location. And it's super stressful being a student. It's super stressful going to a fieldwork site, let alone showing up at the wrong fieldwork site, which happens to be a park in a forest. And then just feeling like you're totally lost because you're supposed to be at the pool.
One of our fieldwork students this last week had showed up probably about 30 minutes early, and we were joking around because she's like, I only live 10 minutes away from here, but I was so nervous that I wasn't going to be able to find, even though I know this location, I was just so nervous. And I said, yeah, you know, it's stressful being a fieldwork student. Necessarily know what the expectations are going to be of you, and it's your academic career riding on your performances. However true that may be, those are the thoughts that go on in your head. If we can think back to being in that position, it was pretty stressful. You weren't really sure if you were going to fit in, or you're going to say the right things or do the right things.
Yeah, I certainly hear that from our OTA students when I'm wearing my professor hat, of the concerns that they have going into fieldwork sites. And I always try to reassure them that we're happy to have them. We're happy that they're going to be with us. And I also hear their disappointments when their fieldwork educator forgot that they were coming the first day, or didn't communicate at all to them prior to the first session. So we feel that having a good, healthy fieldwork experience or internship, because we do take interns as well, which is separate from the university fieldwork experience, that it gives to our practice, it gives to our clients, especially our clients that need to practice social skills. Now we have this really great broad range of people coming in that they have to interact with. They have to hone the way that they're going to interact with these new people. But also that the students, again, have some level of expectation that we can mitigate some of their worries before that first day. And just having that kind of step-by-step. So they get their first email, then they're going to get a follow-up email as we get a little bit closer to their date to come for the first time. That there's an online module that they can go through to learn a little bit about some of our specialty areas. So those are all things they can do to prep. They have a couple, I have a reading list that I send to them. So those are all things that they can do to prep. Then once they're coming and they have that regular schedule, I try to make sure that the onus is on them to communicate with me when they're coming and when they're not coming. So if they need to be absent for a day, I do ask that they email or text us that information, because honestly, completing my client notes and doing the business side of things is going to take precedence over remembering which student is coming on which day. So that really, that responsibility then falls back to the student. So then as we start to work with them, we really start to see that division of what falls to the student as a responsibility and what falls to the fieldwork educator as a responsibility.
Yeah. I think reflecting on our own fieldwork experiences can really help guide us when we take the responsibility to become a fieldwork educator. I had some wonderful placements with wonderful clinical instructors, and I also had some really not, you know, quite the opposite ones. And it was challenging and it was frustrating at times. And we are not representatives of ourselves and our business, but we're also representatives of our discipline and our and how important occupational therapy is to us, and the value of it. And shaking a student's faith a lot is not something I ever want to do. I never want them to question why I'm in the position that I'm in. So I always try to remember that and treat the students fairly, and also try to help develop their clinical knowledge and awareness.
Well, I think one of the things that you had said is that pre-brief and post-brief with the students, and it does take time. You have to account for a minimum of 30 minutes extra outside of your setup time, outside of your cleanup time, to really have that time with them. I find that I make up that time in activity planning, because often even with level one students, I'll kind of assign a particular client or activity to them for them to create the materials, bring it to session, try it out, lead. And so I do find that I can make up that time, but again, it's part of having a structure in place that the students can stand confidently within. And then I can take that time beforehand to say, yep, this is who's coming today. Remember, these are the goals that we're working on. Hey, the parent followed up with me on a parent communication log. Here's a little bit of what they said. So that way the student is included in anything that they need to know that might affect their activity that they plan for the day or their session. And then I'll also start to go into some of my reasoning of why I do things a particular way, like asking, have there been any changes with your child since last week? And I'll explain to the students, I asked this question because once I had a client who had a pretty bad day. And at the end of the session, I went back to the parent and I said, Johnny had a pretty bad day today. And they said, oh yeah, well, Johnny was in the hospital over the weekend. And I thought to myself, you didn't tell me that Johnny was in the hospital over the weekend? So I explained to the students, I'm not just asking this question like absentmindedly or as a it is part of my routine, but there's a purpose behind it because I'm trying to pick up any of that pertinent information that may have happened over the week, such as a medical issue or increased in meltdowns, things like that. So I want the student to see what I'm doing, but then I also want them to know why I'm doing it.
Yeah. And I try to thinking back, I think I struggled a bit with, as I was engaged in intervention with a client, I wasn't able to walk and chew gum. I wasn't able to do the intervention and think about it in terms of note writing, right? I wasn't thinking about it in terms of documentation afterwards. And so that's one of the questions that I'll have a lot of times with fieldwork students at the end. And so, you know, what did you think of the session? How much assistance did so-and-so need in donning or doffing article X? And just kind of see what they say and see if they have a confident answer right away, or they're like, oh, I forgot about what did they go into vapor lock? Then, you know, that's something that we could work to address, or just to help them develop that and become more cognizant of, oh yeah, I need to pay attention when these things are happening because I have to document it later.
Yeah, that being able to do the intervention and chew gum at the same time is actually a hilarious story from my own fieldwork experience, because I had a fantastic fieldwork placement that I was so, so passionate about. And I was several weeks in and I had been treating clients. This was a level two placement. This was actually my final level two placement. So super important. And not my CI, not my fieldwork educator, but the director of the facility pulled me aside and said, Gina, are you even happy here? You look miserable. And I was like, I do. And she's like, yes. And you work with children. You can't look like that. And I was heartbroken. I did not burst into tears, but I think I did go to my car to recompose myself. And it truly just was the fact that I was so in my head about thinking about all the components of what I needed to be doing and checking on everything and trying to figure out what I was going to like, all those things, that I had lost my affect. I just had no affect on my, well, apparently I had a very negative affect on my face, but I had, I, you know, and so she's like, you have to make it up. You have to smile. You have to make it, fake it till you make it, right? You have to make it look good. So from that day forward, I had to pay attention to my affect in addition to all those other things I was trying to learn. So I think that does bring up a really, you know, funny story, but also important point of how much the students are processing in the moment, and they are going to miss those things like assistance levels or subtle changes maybe that happen in the client. So the client had been vocalizing or had been talking with us, and then maybe 20 minutes into the session, they're silent. They're no longer talking. They're no longer vocalizing. And so that's something as an experienced clinician that I'm going to pick up on, but a student is often going to miss that. So that's a great time to mention it or bring it up. Now, I think depending on your style, it's the, do we talk about it during the session? Do we talk about it after the session? How do we highlight or communicate when there is something important going on that we draw the student's attention to?
That's something I struggle with because I don't like to talk about client in the third person with them right there in front of me. It just doesn't feel right. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, this is really important, and I have to remember to point this out and ask them if they saw the same thing that I saw. So yeah, grappling with that. And I've even had that with parents at times where the parents want to discuss things about the child when the child is right there. And it's just the way that it feels like we're talking about them without including them in the conversation when they're present. And it doesn't feel right to me. I've been trying to focus on working on that and also navigating that with parents at times where, depending on the nature of the discussion, I guess it's situational, but as a general rule, I'd try to avoid it.
Well, I think what you said about it feels like you're talking about them without including them in the conversation, I think that's been my coping skill with that, is I will include the child and I will mention what I'm noticing. So, wow, Johnny, you were talking so much before, but you're really quiet now. And so I'll say it as if I'm saying it to Johnny, but I'm making maybe eye contact with the student as if to draw their attention to it. So I think that's a coping skill that I've come up with. And whether it's the parents and like, oh, they're maybe talking about the kid, and I'll say, Johnny, are you excited to tell your parent you did this today? And so like, I'm trying to bring that child along with the conversation, even if maybe they're not at that level or they can't participate in that way. And I think that's how I managed it in the moment.
Still a way of treating them like it.
Yes, that they're present with us in that session. And if they can't speak the words or if they're not in a place to make those comments, I can draw the student's attention to it while still feeling like I'm not talking about the client. And I think that feels really important, I think, to both of us.
And in doing that, we're also modeling. We remember that there's things that we're actively trying to teach the fieldwork students, but there's other things that we're modeling that maybe we're not trying to teach, good and bad, because none of us are perfect and we all have things to work on. But just being aware of that too, that it's also what we do, not just what we say and try to teach.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think, an active teaching component. And some of that is in that pre and post. Some of it is in that dialogue that happens, or when you're watching the fieldwork student maybe begin on an intervention and you see that they're struggling a little bit, they might be looking at you as a fieldwork educator, like, what do I do now? So sometimes they really need that help because they are struggling a little bit. They don't know if it's an upgrade or a downgrade time, you know, when to push, particularly for clients that are maybe a little more sensory sensitive or are going to have some participation issues. I know that the students tend to, you know, look to us for guidance to see when they need to hold a boundary and when they need to be flexible. And a lot of times what I come back to the student and say is, how does it relate to their goals? Like, I don't care what color crayon the kid picks. It has nothing to do with his goals whatsoever. If he wants to color the cat orange, like, so what? If he wants a marker versus a crayon, like, it's not his goal to use a particular utensil. So I think.
And I think as a new clinician, you get wrapped up in the minutia of the kid's personality, which is very important. But it's important to understand their preferences and so what the kid's picked orange. Well, orange is his favorite color. And I can know that and I can use that as a motivational tool later on down the line. But I think as a new clinician or even as a fieldwork student, you feel like if you don't document that super important piece of information, you're going to forget and you won't be able to use it again. So it's maybe a little bit of information hoarding is why, you know, there's that drive to over document.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because a lot of students seem to, they're just working on the concepts and understanding how they apply to occupational therapy and then taking that next step and documenting it towards an end goal then becomes like a whole nother piece and skill set. And so for our level one students, that's not a huge focus for us. We might talk about the goals just so they know what direction that we're moving in and what activities would be appropriate if they're helping us planning an activity. But when it comes to level two fieldwork students, then it really is important that they're able to translate the intervention, the response into an appropriate documentation. And it's interesting because each setting is so unique in the way that they document. And I think that's something that students really struggle with. I know that students who go to a school setting have a much different documentation experience than those who go to a rehab setting and, you know, are maybe using a more traditional soap note and then maybe come to a facility like ours that's using goal attainment scaling and have to look more at that and maybe review over their documentation notes, things like that. So there really is a bit of a learning curve, especially between our level one students who are coming for experience and exposure versus a level two student who's really coming to hone in on their ability to provide pediatric OT. Again, outside of specialty areas, we want them to be really strong pediatric OTs, not necessarily really strong in a specialty area like hippotherapy or aquatic therapy. To us, it's important that they have those foundational skills that they can take anywhere. Like, I want them to be able to take the ability to observe and document any setting that they're going to go to after working with us.
Yeah, I think it's really important to get that across, that I just like we will tell parents, the therapy is not about the pool. It's for the aquatic setting, we'll say, not about the pool.
Or the horse.
It's really about the kid and it's about helping them. And that's the bottom line. So if they show up the first day and they're nervous and they don't want to get in the pool, that's not a big deal. Or if they have a meltdown and they don't get in the pool, that's okay. After all, you're seeing us to help you with whatever issues that we're confronting, really having that expectation of it may look a bit different. It may be in a different setting than what you're typically think of when you signed up to go to school, but the heart and soul of it is still the same. It's still the same, and the same principles still apply. It's just, how do we modify it and how do we select the best setting to help that particular client?
Yeah, I think helping our students get to the heart of OT is really one of the things that we strive for in our fieldwork program and in our internship program. And hopefully those of you who are listening can really start to think about where a fieldwork student or an intern might fit into your facility or to your program. And, you know, both that two-way street, how they can help you and how you can help them as well. We've talked a lot about setting up that structure, making sure that we set time aside to debrief, to find out information. I think some of the benefits that we get back are having that extra set of hands and extra set of eyes, both in aquatics and using hippotherapy. That extra set of hands can be really helpful a lot of times. There's a lot of moving parts, whether we're in the pool and we need somebody to clean up the pool deck, or we're with the horse and we need somebody to go get that extra prop toy piece of equipment, extra set of hands, especially a set of hands that's a bit more educated than maybe a typical volunteer. that can be super helpful. So I definitely find just the extra set of hands as a benefit.
Yeah. If you need somebody for contact guard or they're settings that have inherent risks. And that's another thing that we really try to drive home is that while they are unconventional settings and, there are inherently risks associated with those settings. And so our job is to first and foremost mitigate those risks to the greatest extent possible. And part of that is educating the fieldwork students on, you know, what to do, what not to do, the importance of safety in those environments. And maybe some of the thing that the basic hazards or common hazards that they may encounter.
Yeah, I think another benefit that really comes from fieldwork students is that ability for them to ask you a question on your clinical reasoning. And it really brings it to the forefront of your mind of like, oh, why did I do that? Why did I do it when I did it? Why did I do it the way that I did it? Because the more familiar you become in your area, the more that you've treated, the more kind of automatic some of the decisions that you make become. You do it because it's the right time to do it. It's what the client needed. But then when it comes time to articulate it, it can be really challenging. And the fact that the student's going to ask that question, they're going to ask you to articulate it is fantastic. But the thing that makes it even better is it's going to make you better in speaking to the parents and explaining to them what's going on with their kid. There's nothing better than a student kind of questioning why you did something when you did it, because it, when you go back to the parent, you're going to be able to deconstruct it, break it down, and explain it to them so much more easily than you would have if that student hadn't asked that question.
Yeah, I have the opposite problem because I'm definitely the more social of the two of us. I have the gift of gab. And so for me, it's learning when to be quiet and trimming the fat on what I'm saying, say. And that articulation piece that you talked about, I run into a challenge where I don't get my thoughts, my ducks in a row when it comes to my thoughts before I start talking. So helping, it definitely does help to have that experience with the students where you're articulating why it is you did what you did and you learn to do it as concisely as possible.
So some other benefits as a fieldwork educator is that students can be great for capturing photo and video for social media, for promoting your business. And it's a great opportunity for them to understand that you can have a private practice. You can have your own business, and letting them see a little bit of the business side of things too, I think is really invaluable for them as students, because that's something that they're not going to get in a lot of other settings. And so including them in some of that, and let's face it, all of our students, or almost all of our students, are younger than us and probably way more tech savvy. And so, or social media savvy, telling them what you want. Do you want it for Instagram? Do you want it for Facebook? Do you need a reel? Are you posting something to TikTok? Is it going to go on LinkedIn? They can actually help you craft something really fantastic. If they're there anyway, or if you have more than one fieldwork student, like, okay, fieldwork student A, you're working with Johnny, fieldwork student B, you're working with Sarah. And the one who's not working at that time, you know, can you please take photos? Can you please document through video of what we're doing? We like to share it in our parent communication log, videos and photos with the parents. So that's another fantastic way. We have a particular activity where we're going like, hey, get this on video, because then I can share it with the parent that night. So it's a great benefit to have both their tech savviness, but also that extra set of eyes to document things that I normally wouldn't be able to get photo or video of. I mean, if you were the treating clinician, how often can you get a photo or video of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, other than setting up a GoPro with parental consent for photo video release. We've been talking about that. I feel, especially in the pool, if we're working on an area of physical dysfunction, and I'd like to have a little bit better visibility of what's going on with the lower extremities, having like a waterproof GoPro where I could document that and I could see, okay, how much are the hips internally rotating and how much knee flexion are we getting, and to really get a better sense, because I can see it from the surface of the water, but not as clearly or from the angle that I would like to, that would be the most clinical importance.
Yeah. So definitely having fieldwork students and interns is a two-way street. There are things that you're going to give and there are things that you're going to get. And making sure that you've planned for those, put those in place, can really make it a successful experience for both. And we're going to bring new clinicians into our profession that are excited, that are passionate. And even if they're never going to work in the aquatic setting or using hippotherapy, they're going to know something about what we do. They're going to be able to maybe make an appropriate referral 10 years down the line to, not to us probably, but to somebody else. They're going to understand enough about nature-based therapy to make an appropriate referral, to go to the school system and say, hey, I think student A here would do really well in a non-traditional setting. So not only are we helping to enhance the profession by taking fieldwork students or taking on interns, we are also helping ourselves and our areas of specialty, the unique practice settings that we work in, by educating and exposing students. And I know that the interns that we've worked with, when they actually get into, a lot of the interns that we work with, they go on to apply to OT school as an OTA or as an OTR. One of our most recent interns, she is now an OTR student. And she has talked up her internship so much that we actually have another young lady who is coming on an independent internship because she wants to learn more and see. They're super motivated. They're extremely passionate. They're so fun to work with. And I think they really do bring a lot to our experience as clinical or as clinicians and as fieldwork educators.
Yeah, it's a really cool experience to see somebody who's just, you know, starting their journey. And in a couple of instances, I've seen interns where they've really surprised me with, it's like, wow, I could see this person as an OTR. You can just get a sense of like, this person has a really good eye for what is going on. And they've come up with some really good ideas, or they've made some suggestions that I think would be really helpful.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of value. There's a lot of value to us. There's a lot of value to the students. And I hope that if you haven't taken on fieldwork students or interns and you're interested in doing so, don't hesitate to reach out to us. We'd love to support other clinicians who are thinking about this so it can be a successful experience. If you are a fieldwork coordinator and you're looking for fieldwork placements, there are a couple of different places where fieldwork sites that are listed in these non-traditional or unique practice settings. And if you're a student or going to be an OT student and you're interested in an internship or a fieldwork placement, certainly reach out to us. You can find us on Instagram or Facebook, and we'd love to connect with you. We'd love to hear your experiences as fieldwork educators, and we'd love to hear some student experiences.
I like doing podcasts with you.
I like doing with you too.
We'll see you guys next time.